Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week, I've got Gavin and Chris Miller with me. Hi, guys.
Hi, Chris Evans. It's Chris Miller. Glad to be here.
Hi, Chris and Chris.
So there's just the three of us tonight, no Martin. And we thought it'd be good, not because Martin's not here, of course, but we thought it would be good to catch up and just have a bit of a chat about the industry, where we see things are going, where we think the future might be for some of the technology out there. And to start us off, let's have a little chat about the Dell and VMware potential merger, reverse IPO, or what on earth they think they were going to be doing. What, Chris, why don't you just give us some background to that?
Dell filed a paper with the SEC a few days ago saying it was considering having an IPO and also considering some form of combination with VMware without specifying what that might be and making it clear that nothing actually might happen. But something's being considered at board level. And the implication is that it needs to pay down its debt and seize an opportunity to make some money somehow to get cash to pay down the debt faster than it would otherwise do.
Do you know what? I think they should go to one of those loan companies you see on all of the rubbish channels on the TV and see if they can get a big loan and pay it all off. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a lot of money. I think they're still outstanding, isn't it?
The amount it paid to buy EMC was $67 billion, and with that and going private, it's generally reckoned its debt is in the range of $50 to $55 billion. So that costs a great deal of money to service every year. And it may be it sees an opportunity just to cut the debt servicing charge by reducing the debt. Or it may be that some part of its organization's not performing well enough, so it needs somehow to raise more money to be able to afford the debt it's currently got.
Right. Gavin, do you reckon this is just a bit of financial trickery, or do you reckon there's actually a real thing here?
That's the key thing, because you look at some of the articles that have been published online all over the place. It's interesting. Some people are speculating at whether this is a strategic move, even to the point of, you know, who would be in charge and who would be the boss and who would report to who. Or is this just, as I said, financial trickery, where, you know, money's either A, being used to pay off debts, or even, you know, tax implications, if there are a more efficient way of running the alliance, so to speak, and running around there. So it's hard to tell at this point, and there's a lot of speculation going around in the industry.
I think there may be something there. If you look at IDC numbers for the third quarter of 2017, Dell led it, the storage market, with something like a 28.8% share, but that was down 4% on a year ago. ODMs did very well. They saw huge growth, but NetApp did well. It got 9.4% growth. And IBM also did very well. So you could say to yourself, well, take that, have a look at Dell's refuse to lose channel program, in which Marius Haas said Dell needed to recover ground lost to the other vendors, and think, well, if they're instituting that now, very early on in the first quarter of 2018, then the last quarter of 2017 was probably poor as well. And you could construct a scenario in which the $67 billion EMC purchase isn't delivering as many of the goods as it was hoped to deliver. And if that's happening, that would certainly excite some interest at board level and might, just might, be part of the context contributing to this talk about an IPO or some form of combination with VMware. But this is all happenstance. It's all speculation. There's nothing substantial there to justify that.
The other way to look at this as well, if what's going on, is are we starting to see the beginning of the change in the Dell EMC business that we kind of expected when the acquisition took place? In that, if you look at it to date, really, it's been EMC running within Dell, but almost as a separate entity. Whereas what I think a lot of the potential in the future for that company is to start building solution stacks. So, okay, we've seen some hyperconverged stuff, you know, particularly with the VCE being brought in-house. But what we've not seen is really them building out a complete converged solution. And back to the old point of that I learned when I was in EMC, which is nobody really buys storage. They buy a solution, and storage just happens to be the necessary evil. To do that, maybe they're going to need to lose some market share. They're going to need to change their business around. And perhaps they're trying to shuffle the assets around to change a behavior within the sales staff as well. It's, again, as Chris said, it's all speculation. But I can see that there could be more from Dell EMC than there currently is out there in the marketplace at the moment.
So, Chris, I think it's right that some businesses got not necessarily chopped, but they've certainly been moving functions around in different teams. I think HCI is one that's been sort of divided up a little bit.
Yes, that's right. The Dell EMC bit basically ended up in an organization with servers, storage, running by Jeff Boudreau, Chad Sakac's HCI part, and Beth Phelan's data protection. And then there's also Tom Burns's network unit in there. What's happened is that Chad Sakac's HCI unit, the VxRail, VxBlock and so forth, has been cut up and distributed, with servers getting the VxRail and the HCI stuff, Jeff Boudreau getting the VxBlock and things like that, and Chad now having basically no organization to run and working out a new role for himself. The only part of EMC that's still recognizably there is Beth Phelan's data protection group. Everything else has been basically spread around the other Dell organizations.
Wow, now that's an interesting angle, isn't it, to think that there's a possibility that, I'm not saying it's been done deliberately, but there's been an attempt to sort of remove the visibility of EMC as an entity by distributing the components of those of the previous company across different business units. Now, I guess that would be a great bit of speculation that was being done deliberately. But it strikes me that it's more to do with just trying to work out how they make the most money out of the different parts of the business. And at the end of the day, some are more profitable than others, and they need to make sure that they keep pushing that business to make money to pay down the debt.
Yes, one of the reasons behind the reorganization of the HCI area was that Dell wanted crisper and faster and simpler decision-making, which tends to indicate that it wasn't getting that before, and that its ability to respond to market changes was slowed down by some form of discussion or infighting going on inside the organization. And they've now got rid of that to try and make themselves more responsive.
Okay, fantastic. Well, let's move on then. Let's move on and talk about IBM, NVMe over Fabrics, and the fact that IBM are talking about some big new announcement coming out in the next, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks, 20th. So that would be, what, 2 weeks tomorrow, I guess, based on the date we're recording. Now, NVMe over Fabrics is obviously something we haven't seen in the market very much so far. The format of the standards is still being developed. But clearly, it sounds to me like IBM really have, or really think they have something to talk about the technology that they're bringing forward. And I believe, Chris, there was some sort of demonstration that you may have seen already.
IBM demonstrated NVMe over Fabrics access between a Power9 server and its flash system 900 all-flash array. Obviously, it had rivetingly fast data access and so forth, but it never formally announced support for NVMe over Fabrics. So now IBM's marketing evangelist for storage, Eric Herzog, is tweeting like crazy about an announcement coming on February the 20th, where they discuss our huge announcement, capital letters, about the IBM Spectrum storage family and NVMe over Fabrics. Wait till you see, he says, how IBM software-defined storage, data protection, and NVMe over Fabric storage solutions will drive more value from your data and keep it safer than any other storage company. So IBM are going to be gung-ho over NVMe over Fabrics shortly. The NVMe over Fabrics startup, E8, has just started selling its software only, with a set of certified server solutions from Lenovo, HPE, and others. Toshiba's just joined the NVMe Express organization. I'm just beginning to get a sense that maybe 2018 is going to be the year of NVMe over Fabrics.
Oh, that's like saying 2018 is the year of the Linux desktop or VDI, or it could be the death knell for it by saying that. But it does seem to be that NVMe itself is well established. I must admit, I haven't seen a huge amount about NVMe over Fabrics. I believe, top of my head, I suspect, don't know for definite, this is a guess, that Pure were working on something in that area, because they mentioned something similar in their last event, and it's sort of been rumored, so I wouldn't be surprised to see something coming from them. I tell you what I do wonder with IBM. The last announcement they made was about using, TLC flash or 3D NAND in their products in the flash system family. And I did look at it and think, oh, great. Okay, so you're now bringing in features that other companies have had for many years, and now it seems to be like it's some sort of revolution in the technology. I do wonder whether we're going to find out at IBM come to the market with something that probably isn't that exciting that people have already done so far.
That could be the case. Ed Walsh is now running IBM Storage, and you do get a sense that there's a lot more energy behind the organization. Eric Herzog is very happily pushing out his message over it. Caminario has an NVMe over Fabrics functionality coming with its arrays later on this year. As you say, Pure is going to be doing something. So I'm kind of expecting IBM not to disappoint with its February 20 announcement. I think something quite sensible will come out.
Is it still fair to say, though, that the NVMe market is still extremely niche? I mean, there are use cases for NVMe, but it feels a little bit like the very early days of all-flash arrays, where you had, you know, Violin running around and saying, we can give you a million IOPS, and no one could really think, you know, it was hardly a few people that could think of a use case for a million IOPS. Now we've got, you know, NVMe vendors running around saying, I can give you 10 or 12 million IOPS. More importantly, I can give you, you know, 30 microsecond latencies, I can give you crazy bandwidth, but the use cases are tiny, and if it involves compromise, then people will use it for those use cases, but they'll be really cornered for the time being. It's only when, you know, the technology matures or the price point gets to a point where there's not a compromise, either in terms of price or functionality, that it then becomes mainstream and then we see the growth. But I still see, you know, the reason that, one of the reasons that EMC pulled out of the DSSD situation is because it was extremely niche and they just couldn't see how they could make money from it. I still think that's still the case with NVMe over Fabric and EA, and interestingly, people like Accelero, who, you know, talked to us, Chris, about, you know, their combination of GPFS and Accelero to get a scale-out system. So you've got to wonder where that all fits into it as well.
I see your point about DSSD. However, what I would say on that one is EMC paid $1 billion for that company, and it hadn't sold any product, and I don't think it had even fully developed any product. And you look at some of the other startups that are in the market already that have developed solutions. I doubt that E8 or Accelero or any of those have had anywhere near that sort of funding. You know, they've probably done what they've done in with tens of millions of dollars. So I think EMC massively overpaid and tried to buy into a market, A, that was too expensive for them because they spent too much money, and B, was focused on a very niche piece of hardware that was too early to the market and didn't really have the advantage that NVMe was going to have when it was built out in the fashion you're seeing the current vendors doing it. So I think EMC was to a certain degree slightly too early, and I think they paid far too much money for that product. Now, that aside, I agree with you that it's definitely still niche, but perhaps this is where these things start at the top end, and you see them starting to be niche to begin with, and then slowly they gradually push down to more of a mainstream adoption. The question is, will we see that sort of adoption curve with NVMe in the same way we see it with flash, where everybody, as you said, started talking about it being the best thing since sliced bread, you know, really high performance, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden we realize actually it needs to be more mainstream and have more features and so on. That would be the interesting bit for me, I think.
Well, that kind of ties in with where, you know, we see the industry going, is that we're getting to more and more edge use cases for high performance and more cloud, public service cloud providers or even object providers in the middle. So you're starting to see a core edge situation develop rather than the standard general purpose, all things to all men storage, which you started to see a few years ago.
Gavin, you've got your feet on the ground again. I think that's a real interesting point to make. Let me just say, if I can, one more thing about IBM and NVMe over Fabrics. I'm going to try and argue the case that it's different from the early days of Violin and Fusion IO, because this isn't startups pushing it, although there are startups pushing NVMe over Fabrics like E8 and Accelero and so forth. But we have IBM, we have Pure, and we also have NetApp involved with its Plex Store arrangement. Granted, Dell EMC took a dive with DSSD, and we can suggest that perhaps proprietary drives did them no favors there at all. Commodity drives will be a much better idea, which is what IBM, Caminario, and NetApp are doing. So I think NVMe over Fabrics could find itself getting established from a hardware sense this year, even if it's basically niche technology at the high end and software, the high end application stacks need to be developed to take advantage of it. Interestingly, with what this, the core to the edge idea, I've come across a couple of companies adding compute to NVMe flash drives, and they're saying, they're calling it in-situ programming, in-situ processing. There's ScaleFlux, there's Next Generation Data Systems, NGD Systems, and both of them are coming up with the idea that maybe this is going to be suited to edge processing, where vast generators of data at the Internet of Things edge will need their data processed very, very quickly. And having it, that data processing, some of it offloaded to flash drives rather than have the host processor and an IoT edge device do it, will bring speed advantages. Don't know if that's exactly what you were thinking of, Gavin.
I think what you're alluding to is the whole micro data center concept that we're starting to see in the industry. So I've seen a little bit about flash drives with complete loaded. The problem there is that they're extremely proprietary And if there's one thing we've seen a shift in the industry of late, it's people moving away or swerving away and avoiding proprietary technology. I think if Intel were to come up with something that was an NVMe drive tightly coupled to compute that can scale, then yeah, that could be interesting, certainly for the micro data center concept. And, you know, as we move into things like smart cities and all the various different edge computing use cases, I can see a need for that. But small startup companies doing it, I'm not sure I'd want to buy into that technology. And as we've seen, the storage industry is littered with people that have brought proprietary technology to market that may be different and may be great, but people don't want to go down that road and they've moved back to open standards. So obviously I've been closely involved with that, with the work I did back in the Accelio days with XIO, where you had compute tightly coupled to NVMe. But again, you know, they've done well in that business, but it's being extremely niche so far. But I can see that whole micro data center concept being an advantage to them and other people that move into that space. But just in trying to find the balance between open systems and proprietary technologies.
Let me see if I can square that circle. Let's say there's a host processor and it has add-in cards that are flash drives with onboard compute to do some kind of closely coupled processing of the storage, the stored data that's on the flash drive, compression or video transcoding or checking for face recognition in a video surveillance stream or something like that. As long as the interface between the host processors and software and the add-in flash card with compute on board is standard, then we should be okay. And by that, I mean it's a standard hardware link and it's a standard software API link or something like that. As soon as you say, as soon as those cards become proprietary in the way they're used at a detailed level, then they screw themselves because they're niche and people will be worried about locking themselves into a particular vendor.
Yeah, it sounds almost like a GPU in a flash drive is kind of what you're describing.
Yeah. The two, ScaleFlux uses Xilinx FPGA, which is proprietary as heck because the programming is specific to that FPGA. They have produced code to work with a specific set of databases. So they can say your ROCs database runs 2.6 times faster using our way of doing things rather than having it run in the host server. NGD systems use an ARM processor. So that's a little bit more standard. But again, it's not x86. So you've got these problems of coordinating between the host processor and what the software is doing on the NGD drive. It is a tricky area.
Do we really think that, bearing in mind how difficult it is for some people to do the basic stuff in their data centers, you know, like locking down their storage so that people can't get to it or making sure they're backing stuff up or whatever it happens to be, but do we really honestly think that some people are going to get suddenly incredibly organized and capable of somehow working out how to distribute their processing across tens or thousands or hundreds of thousands of devices? It just seems to me like the concept seems really good, but it just seems to me like it would be so hard to implement that there are so many other problems to solve that we haven't managed to resolve. And I do look at it and think, when we heard everybody talking about IoT last year, I'm wondering whether, are we still hearing the same message about IoT, or have we moved on, or was it just a conversation and hype at the time?
My feeling is that IoT is going to be real, and that people were talking about micro data centers, and I think essentially it's just going to be a server with some embedded stuff in it to handle all the data coming in from IoT devices in the locality, process them to do some immediate response and analysis, and then squirt stuff off to the cloud. I think that pattern is going to be generic, and I think it's going to be adopted with great vigor by the server vendors because it gives them an on-premises server box shifting opportunity.
Okay, I can see that. I'm just wondering whether there's enough processing you can do at the edge to make setting that sort of system up worthwhile. You know, I can see that people talk about transcoding or facial recognition or other things. I just wonder if there's enough of a set of applications and requirements that can really justify the cost and expense of building those sort of solutions and distributing them to the edge, when, you know, the alternative cost is networking, but at the same time, you're potentially, the only thing you're trying to avoid there is latency.
Yep. The examples given of devices at the moment that need a lot of local compute as an edge device are aeroplanes, ships, oil rigs, self-driving cars, which aren't really real. So there's got to be a broad mass of other equipment, like your average small factory department or your average small power station or power distribution station, which won't be generating that much data and won't need a real heavyweight local data center to process it. It could just squirt its data off to the cloud quite happily, I think.
Well, Yeah, that's true. But I did some work for a company a few years ago that's involved in aluminium smelting, and we wanted to centralize a lot of their IT. And they said there was no way they could let the servers that were in their data center leave the data center in the actual factory, because if the network went down and they lost connectivity, then potentially their smelts, which cost tens of millions to restart if they go cold and freeze up, would have a problem, and they wouldn't be able to continue operating, and therefore they would shut down, and therefore it would cost them tens of millions to come back into business. There's a real trade-off, I think, here about what's really real and what's potentially just being said by the industry to make it interesting. So it's going to be fun to see how that sort of side of things develops, I think.
It's with the IoT, I get a little sense that the people selling picks and shovels are scenting a coming gold rush. So they're saying to everybody, buy our picks and shovels for this coming gold rush. But there is no actual gold being found at the moment. And so the IoT bonanza is just something in prospect, something that's grabbed the attention of people that's selling kit that could be used by people doing IoT things. So, of course, they want to persuade people that IoT is going to be wonderful, will deliver them great benefits, but it isn't actually happening yet.
I totally agree. I think it's, and the problem is it's such a catch-all term, IoT. I think, you know, we are going to see a proliferation of devices out there, and some are going to be latency sensitive and some are not. But certainly when you get into some of the you know, the future things where there's AI involved, where decisions are going to be needed to made on a local basis, then that's where, quite frankly, we can't improve on the speed of light. And we're going to have local, you know, decisions made. And that comes into the whole micro data center, whether that's a server or whatever form that takes. But I still think you will start to see latency sensitive applications coming into play over the next few years.
So it sounds to me like you said, Chris, that IoT could be a bit like Bitcoin or a bit like cryptocurrency.
Oh, I hate for that to be true, Chris. By me, that kind of horrendous, ghastly bubble. It's so fragile and tremulous at the moment. I think one of the things that gives IoT a little bit more solidity than that is that it's already here. You mentioned the aluminium smelter. There's lots of factory automation systems. Oil rigs have it. Planes have it, so on and so forth. So people are talking about that kind of thing spreading with billions of connected devices, which could be as trivial as your washing machine and refrigerator, but more likely to be something in some kind of distributed business premises doing some kind of proper business activity, not frivolous stuff like Echo Dots and so forth.
I don't know what to say. I mean, I can't imagine all those people who've got Echo Dots out there are thinking it's frivolous. You know, the ability to order washing powder at the touch of a button, that's a core thing that you need to do in your life.
Is that my irony detector just flashed just a little there? I just got an Echo Dot with Alexa on it to control a Sonos speaker system. So I said, hey, Alexa, make the track louder. And it did. And then, hey, Alexa, pause the track. And it did. I haven't used it since. There's just...
So, Chris, as we wrap up, why don't you give us an idea of what you think we should be watching for in, say, the next 3 to 6 months in terms of storage technology?
I think it's going to be about access latency to storage. I think with the move from disk to flash, then attention's focused on the storage I/O stack and how much time it takes to traverse that compared to getting data actually from the storage and dumping it in memory. I think NVMe over fabrics plays to that, with the idea of effectively bypassing the storage stack altogether and using remote direct access memory protocol instead. And I think, going back to something I already mentioned, that the idea of compute on flash drives will do the same sort of thing. It's all about reducing latency to storage. And those two things, I think, are going to be quite important over the next 6 months, 18 months' time.
So that, I guess, that potentially could cover a pretty wide range of potential products and solutions that we see in the market today already, obviously excluding the fact that you mentioned NVMe.
Yeah, I think virtually every storage array will have to start having some kind of NVMe over fabrics access to it, or an NVMe over fabrics equivalent like a Pyron's hardened Ethernet. But they're just not going to be able to compete. Also, here's an interesting thought. If you have an in-memory database, it's running very fast, but it's limited by the amount of DRAM you have. If you have an NVMe over fabrics access storage with double-digit microsecond access to it, then that's going to start cannibalizing the in-memory database data in-memory system space, I think. I think storage class memory is also going to be another player in this little market as well, because its access latency is going to be so much faster, so much lower than any other storage medium. It's a fascinating time to be around in storage. It really is.
Oh, it's good. It feels like there's some different things happening. We always seem to do this in the storage industry. I mean, all three of us have been around storage for a long time. And it goes through cycles where everything kind of gets boring for a while, and then some new technology comes out and it shakes everything up. And I think we're just about to head into one of those. As you said, Chris, though, some of the biggest challenge is that I think what's happening now, or with the examples you just gave around NVMe, is it is going to require some people to think differently further up the stack in order to take advantage of it. You know, I've been involved in going out there and selling NVMe-based systems, and that point you just made about you don't have to put everything in memory now. You can actually use a much faster class of storage is interesting, because storage has always been sort of the last bottleneck. People have had to design architectures from end to end allowing for that bottleneck, which is why in-memory databases in a lot of cases have been used, because storage is just not fast enough. I think what we're now seeing now is unlocking that last bastion of latency means that things can be designed differently, but that's going to take time because people aren't going to change how they design database layouts overnight.
You also put your finger on something else earlier, which is that there has to be standards in the area. It's no good people coming to market with their own proprietary hardware technology, or particularly proprietary software technology, to do this. It has to be a standard way of doing it so that the broad mass of people writing and producing applications can see a way to move to this low latency storage access area without having to forcefully rewrite all their application software.
Absolutely agree. And that's where it's got to come through. We've got to get people working together on that. I think the pushback in the industry on proprietary technologies has been much bigger in the last 12 to 18 months. We're starting to see people get pushed out that go down the cranky, try to argue it's an open standard because they'll let anybody else adopt to it. I think there has to be at least two vendors, three vendors in there before we start to see it. But, you know, NVMe with PCI Express connectivity makes this a lot easier.
That's great. I think that conversation could go on all day, but we have to call it to a close. I think we're just about done for this week. I'd just like to say thanks, Chris, for coming on. I think there's some good conversations there. And perhaps what we should do is we should come back in maybe 3 or 6 months' time and look to see how accurate all our predictions are and see how things have changed. In the meantime, if somebody wants to stalk you online or find where you're writing and they don't already know, which I'd be amazed if they don't, where can people find you?
On Twitter, Chris_Mellor, MELLLOR.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks, guys. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll catch you all on another Storage Unpacked podcast next time.